contents of the lab report are meant for educational purposes only. They're not meant to be misconstrued as medical diagnosis or treatment advice. Today, on the lab report, it's here, the brand new NutriVal.
Clinical utility redesigned, reimagined. The world of medicine can be challenging. Clinicians and patients are always looking for more options, more effective treatments, and in the end, more answers. Functional and integrative medicine focuses on addressing root causes of disease. Here at Genova Diagnostics, we've watched this field evolve and grow for over 35 years. We've not only adapted, we've led. Join us as we talk about functional medicine, laboratory testing, and optimizing health. Welcome to the Lab Report. Do you have a favorite nutrient?
Yeah, I do.
Which one?
Hot sauce.
That's not a nutrient.
Sure it is.
Lycopene?
Substance P. Hello!
Hi, Michael Chapman.
Hi, Patty Devers. How are you?
I'm crushing it today. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for asking.
Yeah.
I'm glad you're crushing it.
Thanks.
That's pretty awesome.
Of course.
Well done.
Thanks.
Hello, everyone out there in podcast land. Welcome to this podcast called The Lab Report, brought to you by Genova Diagnostics, where we talk about functional medicine, specialty lab testing, integrative therapeutics, and stuff.
Lots of stuff. And if you like hearing about stuff, maybe you can go to iTunes or Spotify and subscribe, rate, review, you know the drill.
You can do
all those things.
Do it.
Leave us some feedback there.
Mm-hmm. If you have additional feedback, you can send it to podcast@gdx.net.
Wow.
Yeah.
Dramatic.
Yeah, that's right. You know me. I'm all about the drama, the
oh,
passion.
Oh my gosh. Can hard wires and circuitry have passion and drama?
Nope. Nor can they cry. Because, you know, water and circuitry, corrosive, not a good combo.
Yeah,
but regardless, I was thinking it might be a good idea that we spend a little bit of time on the NutriVal.
I love that idea. And anyone who's in functional medicine or is in integrative medicine knows that the NutriVal and our Metabolomics Plus and our Nutritional Line is probably the most comprehensive and best available on the market.
Yeah, everyone knows that. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's like a...
Of course.
I mean, but what you might not know... Mm-hmm. is that the entire nutritional product line has been totally redesigned, reimagined.
My mind is blown. It's going to blow your mind, too.
It should be. I mean, I would assume that my mind has already been blown because I've been working on this project for a little while.
That's fair.
But people, you got to see this, right?
Right.
You got to see this. And people have to see it.
And that's why we're here, because we're going to explain to you and tell you why the best nutritional assessment just got even better.
No, totally. And without further ado, I mean, it's here. It's ready. Let's get into this. Let's go over the report.
Dude.
Yeah.
You just used 3 sound effects in a row.
Yeah, I know. It deserves it.
Well, yeah, I guess it does. But let's pull you away from the soundboard, maybe.
Okay. Yeah.
And let's dive into the front page of this report. Oh, I see what you did there.
Finger slip.
Well, let's dive in and see, what does the front page look like? Why is it different? And why is it important?
Well, the front page is important for a lot of different reasons. First and foremost, it's a results overview. It's a synthesis. It takes all the information of the analytes that we tested, which, quite frankly, there's a lot.
Yeah, there's right? like 150 some odd analytes that we measure.
Right. And so to be able to take all that data and put it together and synthesize it into something that makes sense clinically is what the front page is all about. And I think the thing that we sometimes forget is that not only are we using all of those analytes that we're testing to evaluate nutrients, we're able to gain insight into key clinical functions or dysfunctions, I should say. And so that's what the front page is all about. It's what can we put together and determine is really going on with this patient from the functional medicine, from a dysfunction perspective.
And what you might notice is that these functional pillars and these scoring systems are somewhat similar to what we had done with the gastrointestinal line, the GI effects. And so it's really carrying that same concept over here to the NutriVal in a far different way, in a deeper way, to show you that this isn't just a nutritional test, it's a functional test for systems-based approaches to healing patients.
So what are these pillars, right? There's 5 of them. And so let's get into it a little bit. Let's talk about what they're evaluating. So each one of them is evaluating a separate dysfunction that might occur. And so at the end of the day, we're thinking about oxidative stress as a potential chronic dysfunction or acute dysfunction, you should say.
Mm-hmm.
We think about mitochondrial dysfunction, inflammation imbalance, we think about toxic exposure, and we think about methylation imbalance. So those are the 5 kind of key clinical areas that we can get a lot of insight from a test like the NutriVal or the Metabolomics Plus.
And those 5 areas are the underpinning of many chronic conditions and a lot of complaints. So they're important clinically as well.
So inside each one of these pillars, there's a score, you'll notice. Mm-hmm. And I think at the end of the day, the score really helps a clinician to kind of prioritize the main root dysfunctions and where to focus intervention, right? Mm-hmm. And so obviously the higher the score, the higher the need for correcting that dysfunction. And so, you know, somebody might have some major problems in the areas of, say, inflammation imbalance and oxidative stress, not doing so bad as it relates to toxic exposure, methylation imbalance. So it helps you to say, okay, we're going to focus on these areas and I'm going to tailor my intervention, because there's a lot of things you could do from a nutritional intervention standpoint. And we'll see on the very next page, there's going to be a lot of different types of nutrients that are being assessed. So it really helps you to focus and hone in, right?
Yep. And then really out of transparency, we're showing you which biomarkers had been shown in literature to be associated with each of those dysfunction. And then as part of our weighted algorithm, we do generate some nutrient needs. And you'll remember that from our old report. And that's on page 2.
Yeah. So just as there's algorithms set in place to evaluate these core dysfunctions, on page 2, we've got algorithms here to evaluate the need for a particular nutrient, whether that's antioxidants, whether that's B vitamins. And so it's great because if you could just compare and contrast page 1 and page 2, you're seeing the interaction between potential nutrient needs and the functional imbalances that relate to them.
And then, of course, as you remember on the NutriVal, we have the IAAG pages, the interpretation at a glance pages.
Right.
And those are more for education for clinicians and for patients. And it breaks down each specific nutrient and explains, you know, what is this vitamin? Where does it come from? Why do I need it? What are some of the symptoms that happen when I'm insufficient in them? So you'll recognize those pages with a little bit of an upgrade.
Yeah. And I think these pages are really helpful when you're sitting down with the patient, because mm-hmm. it serves as a really just great leverage point. From here on in, we get into a lot of biochemistry, starting with the Krebs cycle page. And we put that Krebs cycle page there essentially to freak the patient out so that they won't look any further and they'll just stop right after the interpretation at a glance pages.
But I also think an important point is that those are the places where you spend a lot of time educating your patient, because you're educating them on how to obtain some of these nutrients from food such that you're not just throwing supplements at them. They can be re-educated on a proper diet.
Yeah, we have food sources for each one of the nutrients listed there. So you could literally just go through those four pages and circle the different foods mm-hmm. that you want the patient to focus on getting more intake of.
Okay, so with that, you brought up the Krebs cycle page, which does strike fear in the hearts of man. And to be honest, Michael, when I first came here to Genova and I had to learn the NutriVal, it's a behemoth. Won't you agree?
It's
scary.
It's a big profile.
Yeah, it's scary.
Yeah.
And as soon as I got to the Krebs cycle page, I got a little freaked out because it's biochemistry we haven't seen in a very long time.
Right.
But now I've grown to love biochemistry and I understand how important pathway charts are in understanding what's going on. So we actually changed the Krebs cycle page too.
Yeah, we did. Well, I think it's important to be clear that we didn't actually change the biochemistry.
Oh, no, we didn't change the cycle.
I mean, we don't have that kind of power. The biochemistry right. is just kind of what it is.
It is.
But yeah. We did change the overall layout. We added some components. We removed some components and tried to make it a little bit more streamlined to tell you, okay, we're looking at the combination of two things, mitochondrial dysfunction and oxidative stress.
Right on that page.
So macronutrients from our diet, fats, carbohydrates, protein, they ultimately go into the mitochondria and are used in these different processes. And if you start to see abnormals all over the place, then it's suspicious of mitochondrial dysfunction. If you see abnormal beta oxidation, which is listed there on the page, that's suspicious of mitochondrial dysfunction. So that's one thing. The other thing is where we move from the mitochondria to the electron transport chain, which is technically still in the mitochondria, but it's a different process. And with respect to that, we're looking for signs of oxidative stress, because the electron transport chain, as we discussed on that podcast, is responsible for producing a lot of free radicals and oxidative stress. So we want to minimize that.
All right. Well, that brings us to organic acids. And if you've listened to this show,
oh yeah,
and I'm sure you've listened to all of these episodes, you've heard
us. Are you talking to me?
Yeah, just about everybody in podcast land.
Okay.
You've heard us talk about organic acids. And so the next page of this report is all organic acids. And because, you know, you're just overrun with all of the information we throw at you, I will remind you that an organic acid is an organic compound that's acidic. But really what it means is it steps in biochemical processes, just like we just saw on that Krebs cycle page. Go from one step to the next step in the metabolism of things. And those are what organic acids are.
Yeah, essentially, they're kind of like metabolic byproducts. And one interesting thing I think about with organic acids is that we kind of discovered these through inborn error of metabolism, you know, like way back in the day. And we use that concept and that idea of inborn error of metabolism to kind of help guide us to what are some of the vitamin and mineral cofactors that they might help tell the story around. A lot of these inborn errors essentially are assisted and improved with the support of particular nutrients like B vitamins. And so knowing that, you can start to play the game of, okay, well, if there's a major defect in that enzyme and it's helped with a certain nutrient, what if you have something that's a little bit more subtle, like a SNP, or maybe something that is inhibiting the enzyme? That might also demonstrate the need for additional nutrient support.
So remember on that organic acids page, we're measuring a whole lot of organic acids, and we sort of section them off into various functional titles like malabsorption dysbiosis markers, the cellular energy markers, which are the Krebs cycle markers, neurotransmitter metabolites, vitamin markers.
Toxin and detoxification
Right, toxin
markers.
Detox, yeah. Oxalates. So we kind of put them in specific categories to help you understand where they're used and what processes they're used for. But what I think is important with our brand new nutritional line is that we added several more clinically useful biomarkers on this page.
Biomarkers?
Mm-hmm.
Did you say biomarkers?
That's right.
Oh, we got biomarkers. Uh-huh. And when I think of biomarkers, better know them. You think you know? You think you know your biomarkers? You don't know. You don't know your biomarkers. This is Better Know Biomarkers. Or a few biomarkers.
Several.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not just one.
Right.
Yeah. We gotta get to know these guys. They're new.
Yeah.
We gotta pay that band.
Still nothing yet, huh?
I mean, we've got to pay them. I feel so bad about that.
We'll get there.
We use that money to hire Travis instead.
Big mistake. Huge.
All right, so let's go through some of these biomarkers.
Okay.
Let's start with D-arabinitol.
Yeah, this is a great marker. It's an organic acid, which is made by certain species of candida, which is a yeast, mm-hmm. in the presence of arabinose, which is a sugar. So when you see elevations of D-arabinitol, it can be suggestive of candida presence or an overgrowth.
Yeah, and so if you start to see this on your patient, you know, I think it might be prudent to follow up with a stool test, like mm-hmm. we talk about with the rest of the malabsorption dysbiosis markers, to ensure that there is potentially a yeast overgrowth, specifically of candida. And you can also evaluate for sugar intake, right? You could, and we're talking about fruit sugars. We're talking about, you know, all different forms of sugar. Are you, for whatever reason, putting sugar in your corn and turning it into cream corn? You know, that sort of thing.
That's delicious.
That's
I love cream
atrocious.
Corn.
Atrocious.
What?
It's atrocious.
It's delicious.
Stop. I said this about ketchup. Stop putting sugar in your vegetables. There's no reason to do that.
It's delicious. Well, I think that begs the bigger question.
What's that?
Is corn a vegetable?
No, I don't think so.
It's not?
A, I mean, it,
I think
it's
it
a
is.
Kernel. It's like a, it's a grain, isn't it? It's like a grass plant.
We should Google it.
We should Google it. I mean, what could you possibly be typing? Is corn a vegetable? That's not very many letters. Even if you're using the Latin, which is ZMAs, that's only like three additional letters. I don't understand.
Got it.
Go ahead.
Whole corn on the cob is considered a vegetable. But the corn kernel itself is considered to be a grain. But many grains, including popcorn, are considered to be a fruit because they come from the seed or the flower part of the plant.
How does that make any sense?
I don't know.
Okay. The whole corn on the cob
vegetable.
Is considered a vegetable.
That's right.
But the corn on the cob, which is made up of the kernels,
right?
Those are seeds. So you put all these seeds together and you get a vegetable?
But those quote-unquote seeds could also be a fruit.
Since when is a seed a fruit? Explain that to me. Since when is a seed a fruit? I'm going to go eat an apple seed because it's a fruit. That doesn't make any sense. What? Do you, if I take the corn on the cob and bury it in the ground, is it now a tuber?
Listen, then when you add some sugar and some cream to corn, some might also consider it a dessert. Either way, delicious.
Atrocious.
Multifaceted.
Well, speaking of sugar and excess mm-hmm. carbohydrates and yeah. destroying your metabolism, there's another marker called alpha-hydroxybutyric acid, which is another organic acid, and it's a very fascinating biomarker. Mm-hmm. It's actually kind of an offshoot of what we've talked about before, the transsulfuration pathway. But what we think of clinically and what the research has shown is that poor lifestyle habits,
Why are you looking at me?
such as alcohol, smoking, sedentary lifestyle, cream corn intake, have all been shown to be correlated with the alpha-hydroxybutyric acid and its elevation. So this is a really interesting marker because it tends to elevate when there's a discrepancy in cellular energy, and that cellular energy discrepancy is like what we think of sometimes is the NADH to NAD ratio. So as that ratio becomes more and more imbalanced, this metabolic pathway gets upregulated, and that tends to lead to production of alpha-hydroxybutyric acid.
It's also been shown in the literature to be a biomarker to perhaps predict prediabetes or metabolic dysfunction.
And oxidative stress. Mm-hmm. Because oxidative stress can also be correlated to insulin resistance, imbalances in NAD-NADH ratios, and therefore lead to an elevation of this marker.
Cool. Well, I think the next grouping of new biomarkers that we need to talk about are the oxalates. And if you remember, we did an entire podcast episode talking about the importance of the oxalates, how to read them, what they are. But you want to give a brief, Michael?
Yeah, you should definitely go back and listen to that oxalate episode because it's really going to help you understand all the nuanced information about the oxalates. But in general, I think about the oxalates as potentially being indications of oxalic acid, right? And oxalic acid consumption in the diet, or whether there's some sort of catabolic issue going on where you're turning over collagen at a higher frequency. And it's also an indicator of oxidative stress because oxidative stress can end up as excessive oxalic acid. So those are the main clinical things I think about. Again, oxidative stress, collagen turnover, intake of oxalates in the diet, and potentially insulin resistance diabetes.
And I think there's a lot of misunderstanding around oxalates in our space. And so what we tried to do is put together as much literature as we could find in our new NutriVal support guide, which is fully literature cited, something I lovingly call the NutriVal Bible, which is available hyperlinked right from the report and on our website.
So aside from the new biomarkers, there's another couple interesting tidbits on that organic acid page. First and foremost, you know, we've got all these different markers that we call the vitamin markers, mm-hmm. And the neurotransmitter metabolites. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's hard for clinicians to understand what to do with those. And so we broke those up into the categories that they relate to. So we broke them up into things like methylation markers, biotin markers, branched chain amino acid metabolites. So that helps clinicians know like how we're using them. And we provide the cofactors that they relate to as well. So, for instance, if you're looking at the section branched chain catabolites and you're like, well, I don't know what that means, then it tells you that we're using those as indicators of vitamin B1, B2, B3, alpha-lipoic acid, because that's right there in the parentheses.
Quite similarly, in the neurotransmitter metabolite section, we've broken it in to show you which are metabolites of catecholamines, which are from serotonin, and which are from the kynurenine pathway, which... Again, we did an entire episode on the podcast on the kynurenine pathway, so go back and check that one out.
Okay, so that's the organic acids. And then from the organic acids, we move into the oxidative stress biomarkers, which are the same biomarkers you knowingly love, the glutathione, CoQ10, lipid peroxides, 8-hydroxydeoxyguanosine, and those are broken up into the two categories that they relate to, the antioxidants and the oxidative damage markers.
And because of their importance, we move them up under the organic acids to kind of highlight their importance.
After that on the report, we've got a couple pathways listed there, which really are to help you understand how we're using these markers as a functional evaluation for nutrient status. So we are looking at methylmalonic acid as being an indicator for vitamin B12, FIGLU as being a marker for THF or tetrahydrofolate, which we think of as folate. And then at the bottom, we have the pathway for our branched chain amino acid metabolism, which is really interesting because we're talking about how branched chain amino acids like leucine, isoleucine, and valine are turning into these alpha keto acids, which then require a tremendous amount of nutrient cofactors to ultimately be used. And so if you see a backup in that pathway, then it can be an indication of those functional needs for those nutrients, or maybe an indication that something is going on in the metabolism of branched chain amino acids.
Cool. So that takes us to the next section of this report, which is the amino acids. Mm-hmm. And as you know, if you've ordered the NutriVal before, it comes in two different versions. There's the NutriVal Plasma and NutriVal First Morning Void. And that distinction is actually made on the page that we're measuring amino acids. So it's the question of, do you want to measure amino acids in the urine or do you want to measure them in plasma? And this is an important distinction because urinary amino acids reflect a pretty recent dietary intake. usually 24 to 48 hours prior to doing the test. And plasma gives you a little bit longer look. Some people say a week, up to 3 weeks. So it's a little bit broader look at dietary intake.
Yeah, and I like to focus on the plasma if I'm trying to get an assessment of, like, is this person getting enough protein?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because it gives you kind of that steady state approach. But if I do have that question, I can also look at the section called the dietary peptide-related markers. And there's a couple interesting markers there. I mean, they're all interesting.
They're all interesting.
I don't mean to single out one as being interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Beta-alanine, you step your game up. You're kind of boring.
Way to alienate the essentials, Michael.
But what I'm saying is if you look at 1-methylhistidine and 3-methylhistidine, those markers come from protein intake and specifically the form of meat. And so with 1-methylhistidine, we think of chicken, turkey, fish intake. With 3-methylhistidine, we tend to think of red meat intake. Or it could be the breakdown of red muscle fiber within the body. So you can use those two markers and compare them to the actual levels of the amino acids to say, is this person amino acid deficient because they have poor intake of meat and therefore potentially of protein in general? Or are they consuming a regular or even high amount of protein and they still have low amino acids, which might be an indicator of poor digestion of protein?
Okay, that takes us to the next page, the next section of the NutriVal, which is the essential and metabolic fatty acids. And we're measuring these in red blood cells, which would give you a pretty long look of intake of fat, the life of a red blood cell, which is 90 to 120 days. And on that page, we're looking at omega-3s, omega-6s, saturateds, omega-9s, trans fats, and some very important cardiovascular risk factor markers around cardiovascular risk. So the markers on that page have not changed. It has a brand new look and feel, and they're super important clinically, as we know. And it also should be noted that essential metabolic fatty acids can also be added on to the metabolomics in blood spot. It's a ton of important information to be gleaned from this page.
Yeah, you're going to want that add-on because if you're doing an at-home collection, it makes a lot of sense. But you want to know, is there a balance between omega-3s, omega-6s? Is this person getting adequate amount of omega-3s? How does that relate to nutrition? Are there concerns around inflammatory fats? What's the overall balance of the fats that they're eating? You get all of that on the Metabolomics Plus add-on for the blood spot. So you're going to want to do that. Not only that, on the next page, you look at omega-3 and omega-6 metabolism. And we're really just using this page to show you that these omega-3s and omega-6s are kind of converted in like a cascade fashion through a series of desaturase enzymes and elongase enzymes. And they end up turning into important things like EPA and DHA on the omega-3 side and DGLA on the omega-6 side, all of which are anti-inflammatory. And so you get to see whether there's any backups, hiccups in those pathways and see all the nutrient cofactors and other regulators that can play a role in slowing down how these important anti-inflammatory fats are being made.
And finally, the last page of the report, we're looking at elemental markers, both nutrient elements and toxic elements. And in the nutrient side, we're directly measuring several different nutrients like copper and magnesium and manganese to give a specific level. And we're also looking at levels of toxic exposure and things like lead or mercury, arsenic, and cadmium to give you some indication of recent exposure.
And don't forget the same add-on options are available mm-hmm. too. I think an important reminder is that you can get vitamin D. Right, you do your standard quantification of 25-hydroxy vitamin D on that.
So important.
So important, especially today, right?
Right.
And the additional SNP add-ons are MTHFR, COMT, TNF-alpha, and APOE, which can also give you a ton of clinical insight and allow you to compare some of the other results on the test to what their genomics are. So you can do a genomic/phenomic evaluation.
Oh, come on, Michael. I thought we told Travis to get rid of this.
I mean, I just...
Travis!
And we gave him control of the board. Travis, uh-huh. Travis, the alarm is still going off. It's the question of the day. I mean, it's just unbelievable, the incompetence. Right? Am I wrong?
Well, you're the one that hired him. Okay, here's the question of the day, Michael Chapman.
Oh, I'm excited. I'm excited.
So we've spent this entire time talking about how the NutriVal has been redesigned, reimagined, all these amazing new features. Mm-hmm. The question is, are these things like functional pillars and pathway graphics, are these being fed down into the sub panels of the Nutravel?
Do you want the short answer or the long answer?
No, I want the answer to say, like, if I just get the Metabolomics Plus, will all of these features be there? If I just get the standalone organic acids test, if I just get the standalone amino acids, will I get some of those pillars and these pathway graphics?
The answer is yes. If there is information that is coming from that report, then yes, it will be updated. So if you're doing the Metabolomics Plus, you're going to get the same front page. You're going to get four pillars instead of five, unless you add on the blood spot fatty acid to provide the additional information around the inflammation pillar. If you're doing the organic acids, you're going to get the oxalate markers. You're going to get the organic acid pathways. You're going to get a couple of the functional pillars. So any sort of information that we're able to glean from the report, that's going to be applied to all the subpanels.
Awesome. So as we all know, the clinical utility of the Nutravel was amazing. It got even better.
Yes, blood brain.
Oh my God. And if you listen to this show, you've heard us speak to many key opinion leaders in functional medicine. We speak to influencers in the optimal health and wellness space. We hear about how people use the Nutravel in practice. We hear about the Nutravel and metabolomics being used in professional sports teams. And so to take it to this next level is just amazing. And we're going to continue to speak to some of these key opinion leaders as we move forward on this podcast about the upgrade of the Nutravel.
Yeah. We're definitely going to talk to more key opinion leaders. Neil deGrasse Tyson? Question mark. You've got my number. Next time on The Lab Report, we're going to talk to Dr. Dan Kalish,
founder of the Kalish Institute and mentor to many functional medicine clinicians.
And we're going to get his thoughts on the new Nutravel.
You've been listening to The Lab Report. If you like what you hear, please subscribe to our podcast, rate us, and leave us a review. To learn more about Genova Diagnostics, visit our website at gdx.net. There you'll find information on specific testing, educational resources, and how to connect with our show. Call us at 1-800-522-4762 or email us at podcast@gdx.net. Well, you know how we mentioned combining vegetables with dessert?
Or sugar, yeah.
Yeah. Do you like things like carrot cake?
I do like carrot cake, but carrots are like, they're like sweet potatoes. They're already kind of sweet. So you're just accentuating a quality it already has.
But now you're adding it to a dessert. You're baking it into a dessert. I'm just not down with that.
No, I'm talking about vegetables, like with the capital V vegetable, like green beans and peas. You're not going to add sugar to that stuff. Stop adding. It's gross.
But either way, you're taking the minor vegetables, as you've now alienated those as well, and you're baking them into desserts. That makes no sense.
And yet you like cream corn.
That's right. It's delicious.
Here's the other thing about cream corn.
What?
The whole thing about corn is the texture. And now when you've creamed it, it's just skins. It's just corn kernel skins.
And it's better
and
texture.
Slop.
It's even better.
Slop. It offends me.